Hey there, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. It's become a hot issue in the race for president, the high cost of childcare, and what can be done about it. And we hope you have an appetite because Black Restaurant Week is in full swing in Chicago. I'm hungry. We'll explore what's on the menu.
When there are spaces that are filled with love, that actively heals our community.
And a vacant lot in Bronzeville transforms into a space for the neighborhood. And now to some of today's top stories. The man convicted of killing Chicago police officer Ella French in a traffic stop 3 years ago was today sentenced to life in prison. 23-year-old Imante Morgan was convicted of first-degree murder in March. His defense team had argued for a 40-year prison term. Graphic body camera footage showed French's final moments as Morgan unleashed what prosecutors described as, quote, absolute carnage after officers pulled over his car for having expired plates. French was killed and her partner, Carlos Yanez Jr., was seriously injured. Former Alderman Kerry Austin is set to stand trial in November of next year. That's nearly 4.5 years after federal prosecutors first alleged she took bribes from a developer and then lied about it. But it remains to be seen whether the 75-year-old will ever face a jury. The judge ordered the longtime city council member to undergo a physical examination after Austin's lawyers insisted she was too ill to stand trial. But prosecutors say the evidence shows Austin is alert, lucid, and responsive. Austin resigned from city council in March 2023 and did not seek re-election. After this week announcing a hiring freeze and cuts to overtime to help address a looming budget deficit, Mayor Brandon Johnson made clear today his administration did not make such a move lightly.
We don't want to have to cut any services. I made that very clear. You know, I've been an organizer, I've been an elected official, and I know the damage that has been done over the course of bad decisions. But as a city, we have to be prudent and fiscally responsible in this moment.
Johnson added today that police and fire departments are now exempt from the hiring freeze. The mayor made the remarks at a ceremony to celebrate the $1.25 million restoration of the Little Village Arch following its designation as an official city landmark in 2022. For more on the city's budget deficit, please check out our website. Black firefighters from New York this morning joined Chicago's Black Fire Brigade to honor those lost on 9/11. After a moment of silence, a bell was rung to honor their comrades who died as the towers of the World Trade Center collapsed.
Uniform members, hand salute.
Chicago's Black Fire Brigade is dedicated to promoting the fire service, education and safety training, and highlighting the contributions of generations of Black firefighters. Up next, we look at efforts to make childcare more affordable right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
It's an issue plaguing families across the country, and the state of affordable child care in Chicago was under the microscope at a recent City Hall committee hearing.
We hear from child care center workers and family child care providers who can't afford to support their families, who are stressed and saddened by seeing the consequences of turnover and understaffing.
Advocates in Illinois are pushing for higher wages and better benefits in an effort to retain child care workers. It comes after a center in Bronzeville recently shut its doors, the CEO says, due to a lack of staff. Here to talk more about this growing issue are Shauna Ejay, Senior Vice President at Illinois Action for Children, Lakeisha McFadden, CEO and Executive Director of Centers for New Horizons, and Beata Scarusa, Director of Montessori Foundations of Chicago and member of the Steering Committee for Childcare Advocates United. Thanks to all three of you for joining us. Lakeisha, let's start with you. Please tell us more about the challenges at your Bronzeville Center that led to its closure.
All right, so I'm the CEO and Executive Director of Centers for New Horizon. We have been around for the last 53 years. We have a child care center on 43rd and Cottage Grove, FEO Ellis. It has been a staple in the Bronzeville community since 2008. And recently, I've had to make the decision to close it due to a lack of staffing.
So what led to the lack of staffing?
There are a number of different issues that led to it. Over the last 2 years in particular, we've been really faced with the main challenge of all of our staff really being transferring over to CPS due to the universal implementation of preschool there. So once Preschool for All arrived, our staff that were also trained and qualified for those positions exited and pretty much went to the neighborhood schools.
What did that mean for the families of students who attended the center?
Oh, it was terrible. So over the last 2 years, we've consolidated classes, closing them one by one until we just really couldn't afford to operate the building in such sectors like that. So the families we've had to turn away, we've never had a problem with enrollment. Our capacity is 150 families. We've always been able to meet our enrollment numbers. The problem is simply that I don't have enough teaching staff to operate. So I've had to refer families to other places. Some families were able to find additional care and some families were not.
Shauna, several people testified at the city council committee hearing that we just played a clip of last week. What would advocates like to see the city do?
I think the city needs to become serious about setting aside dollars to invest in the child care workforce. I do think that is a real important effort. I think it will set an example for the understanding that the child care workforce is the backbone of all of the workforce, right? And we know that parents can't go to work if their children aren't in, you know, safe, accessible places. And I think we recognize that through COVID and post-COVID that we've lost some centers and folks have really been struggling. Parents have had to make difficult decisions about their livelihood and their self-sufficiency because they haven't been able to have adequate care due to some closures of child care centers. The state has made greater investments, particularly around compensation for child care workers statewide, but in the city, because the model is slightly different, it's important that the city steps up and likewise makes additional investments.
And briefly for us, clarify what that model means, because some folks think that childcare money is childcare money, but the truth is, like, funding to educate or to care for one child comes from several different streams.
Absolutely, absolutely. So in the city, many programs blend and braid funding between Office of Head Start dollars, which is Head Start and early Head Start programming, and then Illinois State Board of Education funding, Preschool for All, as well as Prevention Initiative funding. That happens throughout the state, but in the city of Chicago, it typically goes through the Department of Family and Support Services, and folks have contracts with the department and then are able to provide those services to families. But traditionally, those dollars have not been extensive or enough, and they certainly don't go to every CBO in the city. And so as a result of that, many of them also blend with Child Care Assistance Program funds and may have site administer contracts in order to bring in additional revenues to be able to meet their basically the needs to maintain their centers. But what has happened is that because costs have been on the increase, there is less and less money to give directly to staff. And we know that...
I wanted to get Beata in here because, yes. Beata, what's your reaction? And is this a problem that can be solved just by paying workers more money?
Yes, absolutely. If we can compete effectively with the teachers at public schools, at the traditional schools, we can certainly keep our workers. My staff are not leaving because they feel that CPS is necessarily a better place to work. They're leaving for the pay. And who blames them, right? If they can make $20,000 more or $30,000 more a year and have all of summer off, of course they're going to leave. There needs to be equity. And we cannot be competing with each other. CPS can't be competing with CBOs because CBOs, community-based organizations, we're always going to lose. We're always going to be on the losing end. The city doesn't fund us enough. The state doesn't fund us enough in order for us to compete fairly. And we can't increase our tuition and put it on the backs of our parents. You know, majority of the time, the parents that are going to suffer the most are the parents that don't qualify for any programs. They don't qualify for child care assistance. They don't qualify for Head Start. They don't qualify for free. So the families that are just above the cutoff, you know, that are $42,000 and over, those are the ones that are going to be most affected.
LaKeisha, Do you think we can expect to see more child care facilities close if the city can't find, and not necessarily just the city, but if an increase in pay or something is not done to lure them to stay at the community-based organizations?
I believe so. So a quality early learning center is vital for any community, right? That's the backbone of having a safe and equitable community. When you don't have that, you can expect a number of different things to flow from that, right? A number of consequences that I don't think anyone really wants to go down that road of what that would look like. So if we, organizations just can't do it in this way. Like you said, who can blame them? They want to go somewhere that's feasible.
And it's not just CPS. Other places that they're leaving to go find work that they believe pays better.
Yes, some people have went to Starbucks, Walmart. It really depends on the education level. Those that qualify to be an actual lead teacher obviously are going to places like CPS. We're losing our teacher assistants as well because they could be Seekers or Starbucks or Walmart. We just can't compete. It's not enough.
Yeah. What does all this say about the value that is being placed on the work of? Because anybody who's raised a kid or watched a kid knows it's not easy. So what does this say about the value that's being placed on child care workers and the work that they do?
Well, it still remains to be, undervalued. Folks still look at it often as babysitting. It's sort of a mindset. But, historically, we know that child care was born out of slavery, and so it was free labor. And so it's predominantly done, even today, by women of color. And as a result of that, there's never really been an effort to recognize their contributions, really, to society or to recognize the value of the work itself. It's very complex work. These are children that need constant attention. We know so much more now about brain development than we've ever known, and we know that the first 5 years are instrumental and lay the foundation for the rest of life, for lifelong learning. And so it's really important that we invest in that period of time in a young child's life, and we invest in that by making sure that child care workers get the compensation and benefits they deserve so that they can be present, not stressed about how are they going to pay the next bill, how are they going to feed their families, right? They need to be able to put their whole being into that work to do it well, and we should honor that as a society.
Beata, go ahead.
Add to that also, it's not the child care worker or the early childhood worker at the public school level, it's only the child care worker at the community-based organization level, because the teachers at public schools, they make that money. They make, 60,000 plus as a base salary from the day they get a degree. So it's the way traditionally we look at community-based organizations, that it is less than the traditional school, less than CPS. Because honestly, if the city of Chicago really valued the workers, they would have equitable pay for a teacher at a CBO and a teacher at a traditional school.
And to be clear, and I want to get you in as well, to be clear, obviously, the teachers who are going to work for CPS, they then become members of the Chicago Teachers Union. So they've got the union contract, basically, that has been negotiated for them that includes, that salary. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, sometimes it's more of an appetite for that. Right? It's more attractive, and it's really disheartening to know that you have the exact same qualifications as your peer and you can make $20,000 less. So.
And Shauna, we've got just a couple seconds left. I mean, we just talked about the hiring freeze that the city has implemented. We know they are facing a big budget deficit this year and again next year. What can be done in a few seconds?
Well, I think the city really needs to take a hard look on how they support all workers, and that is by providing accessible, affordable child care for all. And the only way to do that is to figure out a way to make investments. I recognize the city has a deficit, but I do feel that this needs to be a priority long term.
Long-term priority. What would you like to see done, Lakeisha?
The same thing. Like putting our money where our mouth is. What's really important? If this isn't important, then what is?
Beata, could help come from the federal government?
Absolutely, but they're already investing. As we mentioned before, the city of Chicago gets a block grant from the state of Illinois, but they distribute it to CPS first and look at community-based organizations second. So the way they distribute that block grant needs to be revisited to help support child care in addition to CPS.
Okay. Shauna Ajay, Lakeisha McFadden, Beata Scarusa, thanks to all three of you for joining us. We appreciate
it. Good
luck to you.
Thank you.
Up next, changing the narrative by creating a place for community. A vacant lot in Bronzeville is being transformed into a new space for the community. The gathering space, dubbed the Southside Sanctuary, opened last month after 3 years in the making. The 13,000 square foot plaza has a performance stage and space to host artists, picnics, outdoor classes, farmers markets, and other activities.
I wanted to design more spaces that made us feel excited, that we could come together to celebrate, that other people could come from other parts of the city, have an incredible experience, and say, that wasn't what I read about Bronzeville. It's important for us to change the narrative, and this space will do that. I wanted to create a space that made us all feel like we were deserving. There are amenities in other communities across the city that we don't have in our communities. We need a space to come together. We need a space to have farmers markets. We need a space to have a marching band as incredible as King Prep to be able to play. And when the Bud Billiken parade comes by, we don't need another empty lot. We need this so that we can sit in the grass, read a book, meet your neighbor, and feel like a community. We don't want people to just come here and go home. We want people to come here. We want them to go to every single incredible business on the block because each one of those businesses has a story. If there's something that you see needs to be changed in your community, don't think somebody else is going to do it. Don't ask somebody else for something. Do it yourself. Go down to City Hall, write a letter, write an email, and express what you did. But don't just express what you need. Make a plan to get it done. If you can't get it done yourself, find somebody else that can help you.
And the Southside Sanctuary was supported by a $712,000 city grant and is located at 47th and Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. This weekend's event includes a fitness class, a yoga session, and a farmer's market. Up next, what's on the table for this year's Black Restaurant Week? It is officially Black Restaurant Week and my favorite segment of the month. It's a little misleading, though, because it's actually 2 weeks, so there's still plenty of time to visit your favorite local spots or to explore some new ones. The event was created 5 years ago in an effort to help restaurants that couldn't afford the pricey marketing. So we've got a couple of chefs from two Chicago eateries. They are here with us now. Terry Evans, owner of Windy City Ribs, and Aisha Murph, president of Hare's Gulf Shrimp. Thanks to you both for joining us. I'm really excited to talk to you, but I'm also excited about the goodies that you brought. So first, let's talk about Black Restaurant Week. How are you preparing for it? Terry Evans, I'll start with you.
You know, this is our second year participating, and so what is most exciting is it exposes our brand to people that ordinarily wouldn't visit one of our establishments. So I think from a preparation standpoint, it's just ensuring that we've got the staff because they do bring out the people. The marketing that they provide for us is really outstanding, which allows people to drive some traffic, additional traffic to the restaurants.
Right. So you want to be sure you've got the people and obviously the food, right?
Absolutely.
Like the stuff stocked up so that you
Absolutely.
Can feed everybody. Same question to you, Aisha. How do you prepare for Black Restaurant Week?
Oh, yes. It's our second year as well, and it's one of my most favorite times of year. You know, it falls right after Taste of Chicago that I just ended. But we started a special. I was like, let's just get ready to launch something new, and this is our po' boy that we launched just for Black Restaurant Week. And like you said, it gives a platform to lesser-known brand restaurants.
So a busy time of year for you if it falls right after the Taste, but that means you're also, it's sort of a force multiplier then.
Yes.
I saw you here. Oh, and I see you here, too. You're big.
Yes, and it's special in my heart because last year at this time, the Feed the Soul Foundation awarded me through Grubhub a grant for my restaurant.
Oh, wow. Okay, congratulations.
Thank you.
Terry, Black Restaurant Week was, as we've discussed, created with the intent to highlight and uplift Black-owned spots. What barriers or challenges do Black-owned businesses face that others might not?
You know, I tell people this all the time. We have the grit and the intelligence to be able to ensure that our restaurants are successful. The challenge is always the capital, right? And so when you can't and don't have the resources to do the additional stuff that's necessary in order to grow and scale, like marketing, you're going to need that extra push. And so organizations like this allow us to be able to get that marketing that otherwise we couldn't afford. Because if you think about an agency of record or hiring someone to come in, a lot of times with minority-owned restaurants, we just don't have those resources available to us.
Aisha, are you switching anything up for next week at Harrah's Gulf Shrimp? For example, you mentioned the po' boy. Tell me
yes,
more.
Yes, so that we have not done this since the founder, Finney Harrah. I took over the business after my husband passed away 3 years ago during COVID. So right now I wanted to keep some of our, it's like I said, we're a family-run restaurant. The shrimp po' boy. This is just specially launched just for Midwest Black Restaurant Week, and so just for them. And we'll see if we're going to continue it afterwards, though.
Okay, we'll see how it does next week. Yes. And of course, our condolences on the loss of your husband, because Harrah's Gulf Shrimp, long legacy in Chicago.
20 years.
Just 20 years. Tell us a little bit about Finney Harrah. Tell us about your husband.
So Finney Harrah, like I say, we're the Gulf Shrimp because this is my mother-in-law, who I've never met, would have been the same age as Billie Holiday, 104.
Oh, wow.
And so that's what we're Louisiana Gulf Shrimp because she was from the Texas, Louisiana Gulf area. What makes us different, why tell people, even though we're a mom and pop, but we're hand-cut, hand-deveined, our shrimp come in daily from a supplier. So that's why we have that one-of-a-kind distinctive taste.
Yeah, which impressed me, obviously. I'm like, how do you get Gulf shrimp fresh daily, never frozen? Terry.
And it's delicious.
And it's delicious. We're going to find out in a few minutes. I'll be the judge of that. Thank you very much. Terry, Windy City Ribs, you all are known for your staple of barbecue foods. Are you switching anything up this year?
You know, we will offer our sampler at a discounted rate, and we'll also do a catfish as well as our smoke wing combination, because a lot of people don't know that we do have other things other than ribs. And for our non-pork eaters, they can come in and try some of our other things that are always sold out, which is our smoked wings and our catfish do really well. So we're going to be switching it up with that this year.
Got you. And so, you know, I'm sensing from both of you, obviously you've got your staples, you've got your ribs and you've got your Gulf shrimp, but you know, I'm also getting sort of a soul food Southern vibe altogether. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yes. Yes. I mean, similar, I think, to Aisha's story, right? My great-great-grandfather sold whiskey as a freed slave. And so I always stand on the shoulders of understanding that if he could do that as a freed slave and sell whiskey to be able to create an educational opportunity for his family, I'm three generations later selling whiskey, starting off in the South Loop of Chicago and now doing it in Navy Pier. So I think the fact that we always kind of go back to the roots allows us to kind of continue to figure out where we want to scale and how we want to grow our businesses.
Now, folks who know are going, are you related to Nearest Green?
No, I wish.
Just
I
checking.
Wish. But we do offer.
But you do
all
offer.
All the Uncle Nearest
brands.
Obviously,
you
yes,
do.
Yes, we do.
And I saw you all just moved to Navy Pier as well, Terry. How's that going? First Black-owned business to be on Navy Pier, or
yes,
Black restaurant.
Yes, Black female-owned restaurant on Navy Pier. Love the leadership. They've been very supportive of ensuring that I get the resources that I need in order to continue to grow. And it's just great. I mean, they see so much traffic. There's so much opportunity for residents that are in Chicago to come out to Navy Pier to experience all the things. And so when they can come and they can find a locally owned restaurant, I think it just kind of puts icing on the cake for what's already there.
So I've been advised to try some food, which, you know, you don't have to tell me twice. Problem is, I don't have a fork, so I'm going to start with the finger food, I suppose, because it looks delightful. But why see if I can get a fork, if I can make one materialize. Aisha, why don't you tell me what you brought, please? You told me about the po' boy.
Yes, like I said, that's what we're launching for Black Restaurant Week. We're going to offer this for a special. And then our traditional, like you were saying, the Southern food, like you do fish and shrimp with spaghetti. And our spaghetti is made fresh daily. It's got bell pepper, onion, and ground beef sauce. So this is what we call our shrimp dinner.
Okay. Now, you're not going to tell me, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Tell me about the fry. How do you fry that shrimp?
Yes, they're a butterfly fry shrimp I call it the family trade secret recipe, and that's what makes them nice and crispy.
A proprietary blend.
Yes.
Yeah, don't worry. she's not telling us, folks. Terry, what about you? What do you have?
So we have our sampler, which comes with three bones as well as two other smoked meats. And so what we'll offer for this, for the next 2 weeks, is we'll do our brisket as well as our pulled pork and our smoked wings. We're going to give people an extra item on their sampler dish, and then we have our staple sides, which includes our green beans, our elote, and our baked beans.
Okay, that's elote.
Yes.
Okay,
and
it is not
favorite.
Mac and cheese, everybody. This is corn right here.
And it is my favorite.
It is your favorite.
Shout out to Pedro.
That feels important. Shout out to Pedro. Thank you. So, you know, we've just got a couple seconds left. What advice do you have to other aspiring Black restaurateurs, Terry?
You know, I think you need to establish your community. To your earlier point, Aisha and I are friends. We're connected in a number of different ways. But I think allowing other restaurant groups to be able to find that opportunity to connect with other restaurateurs is key. because it is a lonely place as a business owner. And so to be able to have that community is great.
And the two of you have each other, I know, as well as some others, which is great.
Yeah.
Good luck for Black Restaurant Week. Thanks again for coming in. Terry Evans and Aisha Murph. Again, Black Restaurant Week runs through the 22nd. For information on more restaurants that are participating, you can check out our website. And that is our show for this Wednesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight Black Voices, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is committed to supporting diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives throughout the legal profession.